the rest of the story. Joe stared at the floor as his agent, carefully searching for the right words, began. "How can I say this?" said John Michael John. "You've had a good career. Some respectable movies, theater, some club dates. I've been along for some of the ride and proud of it. But Joe," the agent struggled, "you are washed up. You're finished, Joe, and I can't do anything more for you. It's time we parted." Joe didn't say anything for what seemed like a long time. He just sat there staring at the expensive carpet in the posh office of the well-dressed executioner. He sat there thinking how tough it was to get old. So was it harder breaking into show business or getting thrown out of it? Experienced now at both, Joe wondered as he stared. Vaudeville, man, that was rugged. The cheap hotels, the lousy food, the devastating redundancy. The eventual move to California had been exciting. The lure of motion pictures, the prospect of overnight nationwide fame. The car trip west was a rough one, sleeping in a roadside tent, cooking over a roadside fire. But then that was all part of the game. After wearing out much shoe leather on Los Angeles pavement, Joe found his way to Will Morrissey, who signed him to appear at the Orange Grove Theater, $50 a week. That was a terrific salary in those days, but the kick didn't last. The show closed a few weeks later, and before long, Joe was living day to day again on little more than boiled rutabagas. Then out of the blue, as it often comes, the big break, a movie deal with Fox Studios. The picture was called Not to Be Trusted, some big names on the marquee. Joe's character was a cigar-smoking con man, the partner of a jewel thief who winds up getting caught and sent to jail. Joe's performance attracted the attention of a casting director of Vitaphone in Burbank. They were planning to make a movie called Orchids and Ermine. "Okay," said the director, "so you can act. But can you do song and dance?" Well, Joe, a vaudeville veteran, remember, had come prepared with straw hat and cane, and he bowled them over in the casting office. The movie was a hit, big enough to convince super agent John Michael John to represent Joe. And good times followed. But it was Joe himself who began to tire of it all. The routines were getting old. The typecast gripe weighed him down like an anvil. And then came that ugly day when his agent called him into the office and said goodbye. "No hard feelings," Michael John had told him as he was walking out the door. "That's right," Joe called back. "No hard feelings." And maybe there weren't. Maybe it was better this way. At least that's what Joe told himself as he returned to the world of boiled rutabagas that he had fought so hard to escape. What I've just told you is a common story, really. I mean more common by a thousandfold than the occasional saga of success in that business of show that will tolerate nothing less. But starting at this moment, whenever you think of the tarnished tales side of that shiny Hollywood coin, I hope you'll remember that day in 1926 when a talent agent who thought he knew what he was doing dumped an old trooper named Joe Ewell Jr., just dumped him, said he was entirely washed up as an entertainer. Mickey Rooney was a has-been at age 5. And now you know the rest of the story.